After defeating a band of mercenaries, the Mandalorian takes a moment to take in the moment. All is safe, for now. My duties are at a rest, for now. Little did he know that a locust herd had taken root on the very planet that he sits, and with the locusts brings Marcus Fenix, hero of the cog. Marcus looks in front of him, sees the Mandalorian, mumbles a curse, then rushes forward into battle. It's the bounty hunter versus the prisoner. It's Baby Yoda's protector versus the locust dissector. It's the Mandalorian versus Marcus Fenix today on Who Would Win.
And welcome to another episode of Who Would Win, a show that completely ignores anything important happening in the world and instead focuses on a fictional battle between two characters from the worlds of comics, sci-fi, and fantasy. I'm your host, James Gavsey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Ray Stecanus. Ray, this is yet another explosive matchup. Marcus Fenix, the iconic protagonist from the Gears of War games, versus the Mandalorian, pretty much the breakout star of Disney Plus. What's your impression of this matchup?
I could not be more excited for this matchup today. The Mandalorian, let's face facts, ever since episode one dropped on Disney Plus back in November, people have been begging us, when are you going to do the Mandalorian? When are you going to do the Mandalorian? The answer is when season one is over and we have something to draw from. You can't just take one episode of the Mandalorian and do a full Who Would Win. We could.
We could.
We're trying not to. Let's give ourselves a little bit of room here to work.
You know, with that being said, I'm going to do my best to avoid anything too spoilery. I know that, you know, when we're recording this right now, the season's already over. They've already announced season two. But you always have those people who say, oh, you spoiled the whole thing for me 5 months after it already came out. I was planning on watching that tomorrow, so we're going to try to avoid whole sentiment.
Listen, for you people at home right now, if you're listening to this and you're really worried about spoilers for The Mandalorian, a thing that is in the world and you could get for, what, $6.99 or even a free trial, just pause the show here. Go watch all 8 episodes of The Mandalorian. They're fantastic. And then come back to enjoy.
That was a great plug for Disney Plus.
I love Disney Plus. I wish they were giving me money to say that. They are not, but I am a big fan.
Speaking of being big fans, we have an extremely special judge on the show today. Someone who I knew would be able to handle the magnitude of today's battle. Making their first appearance on the Who Would Win show is famous chef and partner of Button Mash, founder and chief instigating officer of Starry Kitchen, best-selling author of Adventures in Starry Kitchen, and most importantly, wearer of banana suits. It's Win Tran. Win, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for inflating my ego. I love you guys. It's amazing. I needed that today.
Not having one of those good days?
No, I'm just arrogant and I just love people talking about me.
So I mean, that's fair.
That's what we all are, really.
I mean, my child doesn't really talk about me and I'm with him most of the day, so it's nice to have an adult talk me up. That's always
well,
nice.
We're kind of like man-child-children thing. I mean, you saw what we look like. So.
Yeah, I saw what you look like, and I actually know the two characters you're talking about. So that, I mean, the presumption that you thought I even knew, that I was really flattered. So
in getting mashed up with you for a judge for the show, and I was like really excited about it. You know, I did the typical thing with our judges. Sometimes you go to YouTube, you enter their name. I wasn't expecting the magnificence that I was going to find this amazing video of Win Tran in a hot tub, revealing some of his culinary secrets. It's one of the best videos on hot tub cooking I've ever seen. You know, the really weird thing is I've seen other videos of people trying to cook things in hot tubs. And
James, I think this is a family-friendly show. Maybe you shouldn't go any further with this.
Well, then why were you sending me those videos of you trying to cook hot dogs in a hot tub, right? Anyway, the point is, this was my favorite by far. So tell us a story about why you felt this should have been a thing.
You know what? So my friend, Brandy Malloy, who is the lady at Pop Sugar, and she did this cooking and dishwashing things. She got pregnant. So the producer was like, well, she can't film this bathtub thing, so let's call Wynn because he's the one that we know will say yes. I was like, yeah. So, and actually, they didn't even pitch it to me. They're like, hey, Wynn, we have an idea for you. Yes, that's it.
Fantastic.
Like, you haven't even heard it. I'm like, I don't actually care. And that's really what it was. That's all it is.
So they were right to call you.
They were right to call me. And they're like, well, you're going to cook in a hot tub. And like, well, that's like a sous vide. Like, I totally get that. Sure. I mean, as long as I don't die, I'm cool.
You didn't. And we're thankful. Now,
oh, man. Spoiler alert.
Oh, yeah. Talk about spoilers. Lots of spoilers. You know, you got to watch out for the comments out there.
Oh, yeah. You know, we were talking before the show about how I like to call this expression feeding the trolls. And I think you're a master of this. Can you give us some examples of how you've fed some of these online trolls who probably in private love your work but try to get attention by saying, I don't really like that thing. How do you deal with those people?
Well, I always call it trolling the trolls. Like, you can't take them seriously. So, and it's funny, when you start trolling the trolls, a lot of times they're like, don't you know the rules? I'm like, know the rules of what? Like, you're not supposed to respond. I'm having fun. And they're, and what you don't do is you don't apologize, right? Because if you apologize, like, you know, a lot of times if you piss them off, they're like, you know, if you just apologize, you could end all this. Like, why do I want to end all this when I'm having so much fun?
This is great engagement. The analytics and the numbers like are just going to explode as well.
Well, yeah, but it's also, you know, like, it, a lot of times it comes from a place of passion, because I, you know, a lot of people say they're fanboys of many things. I am. Like, I've been watching anime since 1989. I have 600 video games at home. Like, I'm an actual big, big, big nerd. Like, I'm back into Transformers because I'm a child. I'm reading about G1s and all the different combiners and everything else. Like, and actually, I still have, like, my G1 Transformers. I've given to my child, which may have been a very bad idea. But, you know, it's, you know, I wasn't going to do anything with them, and he wants to play with them and break them, so.
I had, so I was going to give it to my older son. It was a, straight from Japan, this probably 2-foot-tall Goku going Super Saiyan for the first time. And, like, in the box, everything was perfect. And my mother-in-law, whom I love very much, came over to babysit while my wife and I went out. We come back home, and there's my Goku, you know, posable figure lying upside down on the floor with, like, red paint on the head, because my mother-in-law said, well, we just wanted to paint and have a good time with it. It was a fun activity. And I'm like, you're dead to me. Anyway, so...
And then you went Super Saiyan.
I went Super Saiyan.
like that Burger King viral lady.
Yeah, goes, exactly.
Said, I'm going to go Super Saiyan on you.
Yeah.
I'm upset right now, and it didn't even happen to me.
I know. And the only problem was my mother-in-law was more like One Punch Man. So I didn't power up enough. Yeah, long story. Luckily, I'm okay. All right, so... Today's matchup is going to be kind of crazy. Mm. We've got two extremely popular characters. Are you ready for this?
I am, but here's the funny thing. I haven't seen any of The Mandalorian, and I'm not allowing you to spoil it for me because I'm really curious, but I have played Gears of War, but I only played up to Gears of War 2, so I'm going to be educated on some new things on both characters.
Excellent. Yes.
And, you know, but I love Star Wars. You know, I love Star Wars to death. And then, you know,
I would even argue then you might be the perfect person to have judge this battle.
That's awesome, because all I see in my head is someone that looks like Boba Fett, and Gears of War is now in Gears of War 5 now.
5 just came out, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't know anything, so let's jump in.
I love it. All right, it's about that time. Ray, please do us the honors and announce today's matchup.
Representing the Star Wars universe, the biggest second fiddle since Ed McMahon, The Mandalorian. And representing the Gears of War universe, the soldier so abrasive, Sandpaper asked for a sponsorship, Marcus Phoenix.
Well done, Ray. Now, before we go any further, let's go over the official rules of a Who Would Win match. Mm. Rule number one, each debater will be able to make 3 points. Rule number two, the Who Would Win match is a random encounter in a neutral location with neither combatant necessarily knowing anything about their opponent or having any time to prepare for it. Rule number three, the exact version of the character has to be specifically stated. So, you know, sometimes a character will have animated show, a movie, comic book. What version? Obviously, I wonder which version we're using here.
Gosh, James, I don't
Marcus
know.
Phoenix.
I'm probably going to use the Gears of War video game version of Marcus Phoenix. I'm going to feature more on Gears of War 1, 2, and 3. Gears of War 4, spoiler alert, takes place 25 years.
The son, right?
Yeah. After the events of Gears of War 3, and he's still in it, and I believe he's still in 5 as well. I haven't played that one yet. Spoiler alert. And so, but he's not quite the same character that I would want to bring to a battle at that late stage in his life as he will be when he's in his prime.
Fair enough. I'll be using the Mandalorian, known from the only version of the Mandalorian.
Well, there might, and the un-yet-released revival of the holiday special.
Oh, there you go.
Do you think the Mandalorian's in that? I mean, no, is that a possibility?
I mean, Boba Fett's in it. Anything's possible.
It's the age of memes. If they don't ironically re-release the holiday special in a new form, I don't know what we're doing in our lives.
George Lucas isn't in control anymore, so he can't say no like he has been for decades.
Here's the thing. I tried to watch it. because I'd never seen it before. I tried to watch it, and all that kept coming in my head was, who thought this was a good idea? Can you imagine the pitch meeting? Okay, so we're going to do this like Star Wars thing that no one's going to like. So let's do this for an hour and a half on CBS during prime time. This was, I'm not even describing it.
You know what this Star Wars needs? A musical number by B. Arthur. Because that's in there.
Pre Golden Girls.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
Right,
so.
Where you didn't really know how powerful of a superpowered person she was until she got into Golden Girls. Yeah. Like, I think my theory is she has a Highlander type of thing going on.
There could only be
what
one.
What if Art Carney's doing bits the entire time? Star Wars.
Yes. by the way, I'd love to do a Who'd Win match with B. Arthur versus, like, who'd be a good opponent for B. Arthur? Maybe Starscream or
go.
Something like
that. Starscream and B. Arthur?
I like that.
I'm telling you, I feel bad for Starscream.
Yeah, I would lose. Yeah.
All right, totally. All right, rule number four.
Okay.
The winner of the Who'd Win debate is whomever the judge decides has the best ability to incapacitate their opponent to the degree where they can safely walk away with no further threat being present. This includes completely destroying their opponent, removing them from the field of battle, restraining them, or knocking them out. The Who Would Win battles are not necessarily death matches. Rule number five, the judge can disallow or veto a point made by one of the debaters if they feel it goes outside of the scope of the battle or is irrelevant to the fight. And rule number six, each debater must use examples of powers, abilities, or weapons that are a part of the specific character's continuity or at least was with that character for a good deal of time. And now, let's get to the tale of the tape for both of our combatants. Today's tale of the tape is brought to you by Who Would Win t-shirts. Accept no imitations. Find the official Who Would Win shirts on Amazon by typing in hashtag Who Would Win. Ray, please give us the details on Marcus Phoenix.
Marcus Phoenix is a future soldier who was created by Susan O'Connor and Eric Nyland and first appeared in the video game Gears of War in 2006. Marcus was born a child of privilege, but signed up for the Coalition of Organized Governments to fight the alien menace known as the Locust Horde. At the end of the day, Marcus Phoenix is a tragic character. He's doomed to fight honorably and make all the correct decisions as a military leader of men, only to see his best friends and loved ones constantly die as a result of the choices that he made. Marcus is on every list of all-time video game badass characters, and if not for more current installments, he would be a character who ultimately won his wars, but lost everything else along the way. Fun fact, Marcus Phoenix is voiced by one John DiMaggio, who's best known as voicing the character of Bender on Futurama. So I hope you like Gears of War, because if you don't, you can bite my shiny metal you-know-what. That is Marcus Phoenix.
Well done, Ray. Here are the details for The Mandalorian. Now, The Mandalorian first appeared in November 2019 on Disney Plus, and was created by Jon Favreau. Now, set in the Star Wars universe, the Mandalorian series takes place 5 years after the events of Return of the Jedi and 25 years prior to the events of The Force Awakens. The Mandalorian, whose real name is Din Djarin, is a lone gunfighter and member of the Bounty Hunter Guild, who is sometimes referred to as Mando, a generic term used to refer to all Mandalorians. The Mandalorian himself is a bounty hunter who was active during the early years of the New Republic era. Orphaned as a child when his parents were killed by separatist battle droids, he was taken in and raised by the Mandalorians as a foundling, eventually becoming a member of a reclusive sect of Mandalorians known as the Tribe. Due to his childhood trauma, the Mandalorian developed a notable hatred for droids. Per the tenets of the Tribe's Mandalorian creed, the Mandalorian does not remove his helmet in the presence of others. Over time, the Mandalorian became a member of the Bounty Hunters Guild on Navarro, developing a reputation for being an expensive but formidable bounty hunter. By the way, this takes us up to the beginning of the Mandalorian series. And here's an interesting fact about the Mandalorian. Did you know that the two most famous, at least for now, characters using Mandalorian armor aren't actually Mandalorian themselves? It's true. While Boba and Jango Fett may be two of the most famous Mandalorian-looking characters who have ever entered the Star Wars canon, according to the Mandalore government, Jango Fett is merely a pretender, someone who either stumbled upon a dead Mandalorian and stole his armor, or killed a Mandalorian and stole the armor instead. Either way, the fact that Jango Fett is not a real Mandalorian leads to the realization that Boba Fett, possibly the most recognized Mandalorian in Star Wars canon, may not actually be a Mandalorian either. And now you have the facts on both opponents. When do you have any questions before we get started?
I don't know. I'm just thinking about the Star Wars Clone Wars. I was thinking about Jango Fett for a second. I was thinking about Marcus Phoenix for a little bit, and I'm stuck on this Bender thing. That's awesome.
Yep.
The range of that voice actor, seriously.
He's incredible. Yeah, yeah. These voiceover guys and ladies are just so ridiculously talented. It hurts me.
I think he also did the voice for Aquaman in Batman Brave and the Bold.
Very possible.
Yeah, where Aquaman is like this arrogant but really lovable character who likes to sing. Just the range is unbelievable.
He's like Mark Hamill, right? Because Mark Hamill's a super talented voice actor.
Incredible. Right? Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Yep. All right, Ray, go ahead and hit us with point number one, please.
Point number one, and let's just talk about the basics of one Marcus Phoenix. Now, he, as I said in the intro, he was born a child of privilege, which means that he had everything growing up that he could possibly have. You know, he had the good education. He never was lacking for his next meal. And you can tell that because he is a strong and burly and very, very titanic
comically large character. He kind of reminds me a little bit physically of a Juggernaut. Now, he doesn't have that level of strength and that level of power, but he's built like that sort of tanky sort of a character. So the first thing that you look at when you look at the two characters side by side, the Mandalorian and Marcus Fenix, is the Mandalorian is a slimmer character. He's a little bit smaller. He's not going to be nearly as strong as Marcus Fenix is, who feels like he could bench press the Mandalorian in his full Beskar armor over his head and throw him if he wanted to. So the other thing to know about Marcus Fenix is, unlike the Mandalorian, who will fight 100%, Mandalorian's not as interested in battle as Marcus Fenix is. Marcus Fenix knows that this locust horde is invading, and there's just monsters coming from absolutely everywhere, and he's the guy who grabs his weapon, grabs his helmet, and says, let's get into this battle. Okay, his do-rag, it's not really a helmet per se. So when you look at it, who wants to fight more? And oftentimes, James, you'll agree with this, when a fight is happening, the person who wants to fight more is the person at the very, very strong advantage. And Marcus Fenix is always ready to fight. He's a very surly character. He's a very grumpy character. He tends to curse and mutter and stammer a whole heck of a lot. As far as trying to figure out what is this guy's personality, he's angry and he likes to hit people. That's Marcus Fenix in a nutshell. And I love him for it, let me just say. When you talk about as far as physicality goes, one is super, super built and strong, and the other one, not quite so much.
The other one being the Mandalorian.
Yes, that is who I am referring to right there.
Yeah, I was like, wait, the yes.
I was like, I think you're leading.
Ray has the dramatic flair.
That's all true. And the other thing I would just mention right here is it doesn't matter what's happening around him. Marcus wants to keep fighting. As long as there is a fight to be had and it needs to continue, Marcus does not just like leave anything on the table. At one point, he tried to save his dad, who he thought was already dead, I believe. And his dad is a great scientist who invented a lot of the tech that he actually ends up using, which is good, because he might have it around the house. Maybe he has a little bit better training with it than anybody else, since he would have had the prototypes available to him, potentially. I don't know that, but I'm spitballing here. It sounds good. But when trying to save his dad ended up getting killed, and he just said, okay, well, we just have to keep fighting. He grabbed his dad, flung him over his shoulder, and then just kept on going without any thought whatsoever. I feel like the Mandalorian tries to think through his tactics, but Marcus Fenix is a much more instinctual fighter, and he will just go and go and go and go some more, and that's my point number one.
Okay, so here's the thing. As I'm researching Marcus Fenix, I'm loving the character, right?
He's great.
And I haven't played a lot of Gears of War, and I got to tell you, that was a mistake on my part, because it just looks phenomenal, and the background, the story behind it looks amazing. So I'm in. I am now going to be a huge fan.
It's an amazing game.
Right, it seems like
it. I need to get back into him and play him again. Yeah, 100%.
Here's the thing, though, and especially with what you mentioned about his father passed, and now, instead of kind of mourning, he's like, time to go fight some more. I feel like Marcus Fenix sometimes he's stuck in a fighting paradigm with blinders, where he's got this, like, time to fight, time to go, we got to do that. Whereas the Mandalorian is more about, what do I need to accomplish, right? So sometimes to win a fight, it's not always about shooting, blasting your way through, or what have you. Remember, now, who would win encounter? It could be, I need to incapacitate my opponent by trapping them somewhere, or wrapping them up in something where they can't, or binding them somehow, whatever it is. So I think, as great as that is for Marcus Fenix, as powerful as he is, I think sometimes the weakness might be that he is so single-minded on something that he may not see other things that are happening. He may not see what the Mandalorian is really up to.
And I think that's a very, very fair point. If Marcus Fenix does have a weakness, it's that he can lose his temper and in the middle of a battle and kind of lose his mind a little bit. Now, as far as other things that need to be accomplished, we are talking about a who would win battle. What needs to be accomplished is he needs to win this battle. So if there was a mission at stake, I would probably want the Mandalorian to do the mission above Marcus Fenix for the reasons you exactly said. But when it comes down to a one-on-one confrontation, that's not necessarily the case.
I think you nailed it. If I wanted to like clear all the droids in a certain area, I'm calling Marcus Fenix. But if I needed to rescue something or obtain some type of armor or object, I'm, you know, through this, I'm calling the Mandalorian.
I mean, he did try to rescue his dad, and his dad ended up dying.
Yeah.
So, I believe I just said that.
Oh, for one on that one.
Yeah.
All right, so let me go to my point number
one. Yeah, let's get to your point.
That's horrible. All right, so let's talk about standard armaments. The Mandalorian has certain equipment that he has on him throughout the series, or at least most of it. I'm going to try my best, again, not to give out too many spoilers, but there may be some stuff, but
You're going to have to, I think. So.
I'm going to have to, right. Let's start with his helmet, which has a built-in heads-up display with scanners, telescoping optics, and we even more sensors built in, right? He's got the whistling birds in his form. This is a really cool thing that he gets very early on. It's just a series of mini smart missiles that he can shoot out, and they all attack different targets around him. It's meant to actually be able to take out multiple opponents, but it's a great thing to take out one badass opponent you're fighting as well. He has that jetpack, which can maintain sustained flight, which also offers short bursts of lift in order to gain a higher tactical advantage during combat. He can fly up to 70 meters and can be equipped with a top-loaded rocket-firing missile if need be. Now, with that being said, the Mandalorian doesn't have the missile in this fight. So I'm just making that clear. He's got the jetpack. He does not have the missile. Additionally, his geared-up gauntlets have a grappling line, flamethrowers in each one, and blasters. Other known devices in his armor are sonic repulsors, shield emitters, and paralyzing darts. Mm. Remember, Marcus Fenix doesn't have a helmet. That's always been like kind of a weird thing. I mean, sure, that looks cool, but tactically speaking, probably not the smartest move. He's also got a vibroblade, which is a dagger, a really strong dagger that vibrates really, really fast, thereby making it much better at cutting into things and making it a much better weapon just a regular, really hardcore Mandalorian blade.
It's like Neon Genesis Evangelion.
Bingo. Bingo. Yeah. Thank you. His best weapon, however, is his modified Amben rifle. So it's a long-distance kind of sniper rifle that has a disintegration ray, right, with like bullets that you can put in it that will disintegrate when it, you know, the object when he shoots it, that can vaporize targets. He's got a sonic detector on it that allows the Mandalorian to listen in on distant conversations. So it's almost like a weird listening device as well. And it's also a great melee weapon, as it's got a forked front that also can put out like a taser-like shock electric pulses to really like take out people. So you can use it both as like a staff in martial arts as well as like a taser at the end. So it's really cool. And if all that wasn't enough, he also carries as a backup weapon, but he uses a lot a modified heavy blaster, right? That is standard in Star Wars. So although Marcus Fenix's standard weapons are pretty impressive, I don't think they actually keep up in comparison with those of the Mandalorian. And that's my point number one.
You said a lot of really good stuff right there. You know, the gear of the Mandalorian, this is where he's probably got a slight advantage over Marcus Fenix, is the tools at his disposal. And I'll get into, actually, it's funny you say that, my point number two, I'll be talking about the gear of Marcus Fenix as well, because I do think there are a lot of strong points there as well. The only thing that I think is working against you in this battle is that he has all that cool tech, but because it's only been 8 episodes of one season of The Mandalorian, he hasn't really done a whole heck of a lot yet, as far as like overall winning goes. Marcus Fenix has defeated the Locust Swarm. Spoiler alert for Gears of War 3, he won his war. He won his outright war, and he was one of the central reasons why. Whereas The Mandalorian, he rescued Baby Yoda, and then he lost him, and then he got him back.
Spoilers.
He lost him, and then he got him back. And then he ran away. And that's his arc for season one of The Mandalorian. So I would just say, as far as general accomplishments go, you got to look at Marcus Fenix as well.
Does he have all these weapons just at his disposal? It's not like in a Diablo, like, he has to stop for a second. Like, wait a second, I got all these weapons. I got to go in my Diablo bag. We're going to check it out.
Are you talking about Marcus Fenix?
Yeah,
or actually,
the Mandalorian.
The Mandalorian has all of this standard on him, and it's very similar to like how Batman has everything on him at all times in different compartments. Same thing for the Mandalorian.
Okay. I would actually give him one step further. I would say if we're using the Mandalorian, he would probably have access to his spaceship where he would keep a lot of this equipment. So if he sees a battle's about to be coming, I could absolutely see him maybe not fly it around and use it in the battle, because that's not exactly what we're doing here, but I can see him ducking in and grabbing the whatever he needs from that thing. So I actually would say pretty much any gear that the Mandalorian would have would probably be applicable in this battle.
All right, cool. Point number two.
We're here. Let's talk about it. The gear of Marcus Fenix, because the weapons in Gears of War are neat. They're really, whoever designed this back in 2006, obviously designed before that, but the game came out in 2006, the Gears of War central weapon is the Mark III Lancer Assault Rifle with Chainsaw Bayonet. Boy, oh boy. So it's essentially a very heavy weapon that shoots and wrecks things and tears limbs off and blows them to pieces. And then when Marcus Fenix gets close enough, because he tends to run at his enemies as opposed to stay back and shoot, because if you were built like that big, that's probably what you feel like you need to do to everything. But when he gets close to his enemies, he revs his chainsaw. He revs up the chainsaw blade at the end and literally decapitates, cuts people in half over and over again. And trust me, Gears of War, it never gets old. I think you can speak to that just a little bit. So he has originally given a Mark II Lancer Assault Rifle. However, Marcus Fenix is smart enough that he custom made his own version of it, because he was the son of a genius who designed, you know, tech and weapons and what have you. And he got a little bit of that inside of him. So he custom made his Mark II, and they actually used his custom made design to create the Mark IIIs in later games, which I think is just sort of a neat little thing that he also not only helped with winning battles, battles over the course of this Locust War. He actually helped invent tech of his own that then helped to win the overall battle as a direct result of using them on the battlefield. A few of the other things that he has, basically, he would not leave the house without it. He's got what's called a Nasher shotgun. You get up close, you go boomy boomy. He's got his Boltok pistol, whereas if the first two weapons somehow run out of ammo or gets done with, he has that to pull out. He carries a combat knife. He carries night vision goggles and also binoculars. And he also carries a flashlight, which I thought was real, real weird because, as before mentioned, he carries night vision goggles. So I don't know why he feels the need to have both of them, but he does, and I love him for it 100%. Now, one of the things to talk about is the people that he fights with this gear. And he fights gigantic monsters that destroy cities. The Mandalorian, in some of the battles that have happened over the course of the season, every single time we've seen him fight somebody bigger than him, he's generally needed help. In the second episode of The Mandalorian, he goes down into a cave. He goes on a fetch quest, basically. Mm. He goes down into a cave to pick up an egg. Like, that's his fetch quest. It's literally a video game episode of Mandalorian.
Was it first person?
It was third person, actually. Okay. Much like Gears of War.
Over the shoulder.
And so he goes in there, and then the monster that's inside there is very, very large, very, very feral, very, very brutish, and knocks the living crap out of him. He would have been killed by this monster if not for the baby Yoda raising his hand and doing, as Carl Weathers would say, the hand thing. And saving his butt on that occasion. Now, when faced with similar types of large creatures in the Locust Horde, Marcus Fenix wins those battles. Marcus Fenix fights the queen. He fights the giant hive monster and will rip it to pieces with his chainsaw blade, with his shooting, and with everything else right there. Last thing I'll mention right here is that he wears osmium plates. I know the Beskar armor is excellent, and it's a very, very good armor. Actually, I think a lot of the shooting attacks, if they do land, unless he gets a lot of them off in rapid succession or does it at very close range, I do believe the Beskar armor will be very, very strong. But I don't want to act like what Marcus Fenix is wearing is chopped liver. He has the osmium plates, which it would normally hinder your movement, but he's so big and strong, he can maneuver in it with no problem. We've seen him truck across a battlefield without any trouble. He also has bolo grenades. Yeah, grenades. I mean, I know everybody's got grenades, but like when James brings up these cool grenades that the Mandalorian has as part of his tech, we got grenades too. That's all I'm trying to say. So I think it's a relatively even playing field as far as that goes. You know, maybe the addition of the jetpack that the Mandalorian has probably gives him a little bit of a moving advantage. But overall, I think it's roughly equivalent. And that's my point number two.
Not to spoil this, but I think when the Mandalorian was taking on that what's called the Mudhorn, which looks like a huge rhino, sorry. I don't think he was, for some reason, was he allowed to use his bring his blaster and rifle with him? I don't think he was, right? Because it was something, depending on the job was.
He was originally not really understanding what he was getting into.
Right.
He was told, go into the cave and fetch the egg for us. And he goes, okay, no problem. And the monster, I believe, initially did catch him by surprise.
Yeah. And he didn't want to kill it either. That was the other thing. He was hoping not to kill it.
He considered it an innocent creature, and he was trying not to kill it.
Right. And then he was like, I don't have a choice. It's either it or me.
Okay.
And that's how it kind of came down to it.
Yeah, eventually he did have to make a choice.
Absolutely, absolutely.
But at the beginning, he was like, I'm going to be a humanitarian.
Right.
I'm going to be a humanitarian Mandalorian.
Right, that, the exact words he used, by the way. That
what?
Was
really? No. I haven't seen the series yet.
Not even a little bit.
And I think everything else you said is kind of dead on. One of the things that impresses me the most about Marcus Fenix, he's got like redundancies for weapons. Right, but I love his style of the chainsaw at the end of the gun, and then revving it just to say, hey, by the way, in case you didn't know I was here, I'm here. Right? That's beautiful stuff.
He also does a cool thing with it called, I believe it's the tactical reload, and I might be having my words wrong because I didn't write it down right here, but essentially it's a player skill-based thing that lets you reload quicker by doing a little mini-game during the reload process.
Yeah, if you time it correctly, because there's a time bar, you time it right there, it reloads much faster. You
know? I have never once done it correctly. Just for the record out there, I always have the slowest reloads in multiplayer and single-player in Gears of War because I cannot for the life of me figure out that mini-game.
And the shots also get stronger, I think, for that one clip.
But I would argue that Marcus Fenix, being the heroic character, probably being played by someone better than me, would be able to do that and reload very, very quickly.
But he didn't offer the shots get stronger. So does that, since I knew that and he didn't.
Here's the deal. I knew it became a better weapon, but I've never seen it myself because I'm too bad at the game to get it done. So here's the deal. You can accept that point or not. It's purely up to you as the judge.
You know, I'm not going to say, you're the judge, right? So you can bring that on or not. All I'm thinking is we're talking about this is like, we need to really reach out to Gears of War and be like sponsored by them. We are doing them some such great service right now.
Yeah, I mean, Fortnite and Gears of War, it's not like Epic has you know, whatever. No one knows who they are.
Yeah, they're not making any money right now.
Actually, we could bring so much more tiny exposure to them. That would be hopefully helpful for them.
Well, coincidentally, I'm wearing my Fortnite socks.
Look at that.
The marketing guy at Epic actually gave this to me.
Really? So.
I mean.
Well, it's got bananas on it.
Yeah, he's a friend of a friend. That's kind of weird.
You got connections.
I don't know if I have connections, but he likes me, so I guess that's cool.
If you got free Fortnite banana socks, you got connections.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let me get to my point number two to kind of help out with this a little bit. Marcus Fenix is really interesting for a number of different reasons, but let me focus on the Mandalorian heritage. You'll see where I'm going with this, okay? So Marcus Fenix is well-established as a legendary fighter within Gears of War. However, his actual combat training didn't start, if I'm not mistaken, until his later teen years, when he joined the Coalition of Ordered Governments Army, which means his training came at a much later stage in life than the training for the Mandalorian did. Remember, the Mandalorian was rescued by other Mandalorians under a siege of his home planet, and he was taken in. Part of the code of the Mandalorians is, okay, well, whoever took you in now has to look out for you and train you and make you a badass Mandalorian. This is the way. Right? Which is one of my favorite expressions from the show. Marcus Fenix, on the other hand, was born into wealth, where he, and this is fun because I love reading the background of the character, where he often enjoyed trips to the mall with his mother.
Oh,
that's
correct.
That's canon?
Yeah.
That's canon.
So one person is, you know, my planet got destroyed by separatist droids and I had to be saved by the badass warriors of the universe and start my training as a kid. And the other person got to enjoy trips to the mall where maybe they had, chocolate and, other wonderful things.
Hey, going to the Gap can be tough.
It can.
I mean, have you been there on Black Friday? It's a nightmare.
I've been kicked out of the Gap before. I was told there's no clothes for me here. So I had to...
There's no clothes for you here. Leave.
Yes, it was sad. The Mandalorian also had experience in fighting and surviving against all matter of life forms from within the Star Wars universe, which means he has more experience fighting more varied and possibly more powerful beings than Marcus Fenix. It's not that Marcus Fenix didn't have to fight against insane odds and insane creatures and the Locust and what have you. It's just that it was the Locust and I believe another enemy as well, whereas Mandalorian had to fight the Hutts probably. Who knows if there's not Rancor here and there or other beings, powerful beings within the Star Wars universe, the Imperial Walkers, the Imperial Army, the whole thing.
So you're making a quality versus quantity argument now.
Well, it's also the it's a variety versus like, hey, these are the best hot dogs ever. I'm going to keep eating them and take on the challenge of eating hot dogs versus, hey, here's a buffet and I've got to be able to manage this buffet all the time, right? That probably makes no sense now that I said that out loud, but...
Marcus is the buffet line. The Mandalorian is the five-star...
Right.
Three Michelin bounty hunter.
Right. The Mandalorian is James Gabzee. Marcus Fenix is what Rey Sicanus hopes to be someday if things go well.
Boy, if I was Marcus Fenix, that would be both great and horrific at the same time. He's not a very lucky individual.
No, there's a real pros and cons thing to that. The real advantage of the Mandalorian's cultural upbringing was the emphasis on Beskar, especially Beskar armor. So in the Star Wars universe, Beskar is considered to be one of the strongest, if not the strongest and most durable metals there are. It can easily take heavy blaster fire without being damaged, can take super hard impacts without denting, and even a lightsaber can't damage it, and that's really important. The Mandalorians as a culture put great emphasis on the importance of Beskar, and as a result, the Mandalorian quest that we're talking about had a new set of armor made out of Beskar completely that kind of covers him, not completely head to toe, but like over large body parts. His helmet, so his head's completely protected by it, chest, back, arms, shoulders, even on his hands, everything's all kind of armored up. And this stuff has protected him from heavy gunfire, explosions, and insane blunt force trauma. Now, with that being said, of course, when he gets hit by something, the body's still inside, so he'll still get thrown around. That'll cause some damage. But in terms of blaster fire or being able to survive a lot of shots, especially headshots, because he's got the helmet completely armored with it, he's got a super high level of survivability and durability. And that's where he's got something at a much higher level than Marcus Fenix, unfortunately. And just because Marcus Fenix doesn't wear a helmet. Right? Now, on top of that, I know Marcus Fenix wears armor, so I did some research on it, and the way it was described is that it was rated as strong but decent to medium in terms of protection against damage, right? Which I think is a testament to the Locust weapons, but also says he's taking a lot of damage if he's wearing this and gets shot with something or hit with something. So the Mandalorian's culture, which emphasized combatives and training from an early age, as well as its celebration of super durable Beskar armor, give the Mandalorian a distinct advantage over Marcus Fenix, both in combative proficiency and protection in the form of armor. And that's my point number two.
That's an excellent point. And that's actually not something I had considered. Do you have something you want to weigh in right there?
No, I got to ask you because you mentioned that it protects them from blunt force trauma, but can I get an example? Because
Sure.
Getting a lot of long distance range kind of stuff, but how does it, I want to know.
You're asking the correct question right now. How would Beskar armor protect you from the chainsaw bayonet?
Oh, the chainsaw bayonet would actually be the easiest thing to
really?
Be protected.
Ooh.
Yeah, here's the thing. He survived explosions. He survived, so again, I'm trying not to give away too much, but in the final episode where he's trapped in a very contained area and some of the remaining Imperial forces who are kind of operating under like a warlord come in and they're trying to get something from him, what have you, and they're kind of attacking him. He stays behind to try to provide a distraction so his teammates can leave. They start throwing the heavy, like Gatling gun type of blasters at him, and he's tanking that. High-level explosions, flamethrowers, at close range, by the way. And he's taking hit after hit after hit and surviving it. Now, of course, you're hearing, he's getting hit, but he's then standing up after.
Huh.
Yeah, so in terms of durability, it's really at a whole level, another level. Remember, the golden standard in Star Wars is if your armor can take a lightsaber blow, and Beskar armor is known for being able to easily not take any damage from a lightsaber.
And that is one good thing. I would say if we're arguing armor, and I wanted to make a point to say, well, at least Marcus Fenix has some armor, but he has armor that was mass-produced for an entire army to fight against a locust swarm, whereas the Mandalorian has Beskar armor that was made for him specifically by a master artisan who was literally, it's like a custom-made suit that was tailored exactly for him using all the pieces of Beskar that he got throughout the course of the season one.
And this is a material, obviously, that the Empire/First Order/Final Order never ever harvested.
Well, they're actually the ones who give it to him.
Right. Yeah. It's not an easily, you know, it's not very like rare. All over the place. It's very rare.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like adamantium in a weird way with the Marvel Universe. Yeah. So it's very, very rare. Doing a job for the remaining Empire forces got him a ton of it. In terms of what they can use, it was like a huge, even he was like, couldn't believe how much there was.
It's a huge commodity.
It's a huge commodity. Huge. He got a big amount and it was instantly forged, as Ray said, by a specialist into exact armor fitting his specifications.
And not just that, he had extra that he shared with his crew as well. Like all the other Mandalorians on the planet got to get some of the.
He's a sweet guy.
But I would say the armor itself is fine. The body inside the armor, when he takes some of these blasts, not always so good.
No, that's true. So he does get bounced around in the armor, but it's, you know, he's tanking a lot of this stuff.
I'll get into that in my point number three, James, because I have a lot more I want to say about that.
Are we at the turning
point? We are at the turning point.
We're at the turning point. Okay, so Wynn, you've heard 2 points so far. The turning point is where you tell us whom you think is ahead in this battle and what the other side has to do to pull out a victory.
I mean, I'm trying not to be biased because I know a lot more about Marcus Fenix than I do the Mandalorian. I think Marcus Fenix edges out the Mandalorian for a little bit. This is why I think. I think it's brute strength and mental force versus someone that's super clever. And I wouldn't even say lucky. You get out of enough situations like that. And I agree with, you know, he's probably dealt with some crazy monsters that are very different. The Locust Horde, they're very similar and they evolve from that. So you have a foundation of what they were before, and then you can evolve like your tactics from that. I'd say Marcus Fenix a little bit, because I mean, I just think, you know, Marcus Fenix is like a wall of muscle and he's just relentless. Mandalorian, I think he has the greater gear, but I just wonder if Marcus Fenix gets within arm's reach of the Mandalorian, does he survive? That's the hardest part.
Good question.
And, yeah, because his armor's there, but if he figures out how to get that through that armor, then does that end? Mm. So, yeah.
Luckily, I have an answer for that.
Oh, that's
yes.
So good.
I had a feeling you might.
All right, let's go. So, Ray, we're super close. Yet again, this happens all the time.
What are the odds?
All right.
It's almost like we put these matchups together to be close.
It's weird how it happens. Huh. All right, hit us with your point number three, please.
Point number three, I've got a couple of things I want to talk about here. First off, the piece of gear and equipment that Marcus Fenix has at his disposal that I maybe sandbagged and didn't mention in my point number two, a little something called the Hammer of Dawn. The Hammer of Dawn is a mega weapon. It is essentially a doomsday device level weapon that Marcus Fenix uses multiple times, as does his coalition COG forces, through the Gears of War games. Now, it is an emulsion-energized satellite particle beam weapon, and I had to write that down because that's 6 words that are all hard for me in a row. Wow. where's my medal? What the effect of this thing is it's a little like a laser pointer weapon that he points at something, and then a satellite way above the planet drops essentially a neutron bomb on maybe not neutron, but you get the idea. It drops a big ol' explodey on wherever he's pointing that little laser rifle right there. So whenever he's dealing with like a very, very large creature, all he's got to do is get the Hammer of Dawn. He just gets the little laser pointer on it, and as long as the thing is powered up, which we assume he can get maybe, what, one shot off with it, I would imagine. I think getting two shots of the Hammer of Dawn off in a battle, it's done in the Gears of War games, but I just think the Mandalorian's too good for that. But here's one thing that I can postulate, is that I gave you permission to go ahead and have Mandalorian go inside of his ship earlier in order to get his weapons. When Mandalorian goes inside his ship to get his gear and get his weapons and get ready for this battle, Marcus Fenix has the Hammer of Dawn, and he can absolutely take that ship out, which that ship is not particularly durable. We see it get torn to pieces multiple times over 8 episodes in The Mandalorian. So the Hammer of Dawn evaporates literally anything that's going to be around it. So if he gets into a long-range battle with the Mandalorian, and based on the jump pack, based on the spaceship that we've put on the record, he can do that. Hammer of Dawn comes down and vaporizes the Mandalorian, making this a very easy battle if Marcus Fenix can get at range. And you already said, maybe that's what Mandalorian wants is to get away from him, because if Marcus Fenix gets his hands on him, then we're already done that way too. The other thing I want to talk about is the will to fight. The will to fight. And I kind of alluded at it in point number one, but I really want to go back and circle around on it. Because Marcus Fenix, if there's a battle to be had, he gets in that battle. I wasn't going to mention a ton about it, but in Gears of War 4, his son, JD, comes to his cabin in the woods, basically, and says, we are fighting again. The swarm is here. We got to go take him out. And he's like, you don't have to convince me. I am going with you. If there's a fight to be had, Marcus Fenix, regardless of what's going on in his personal life, is going to get in on that fight. In the final episode of The Mandalorian, how exactly did The Mandalorian fare? Guys, I'm going to go ahead and tell you, so spoiler alert there, because him and his friends end up getting ambushed and taken on by Giancarlo Esposito, fantastic actor, big fan.
Always a bad guy.
Gus Fring, from Breaking Bad, and he's awesome. I love him so much. But there are tons of stormtroopers and other types of troops all around, and they're essentially trapped inside of a building. And you're right, because The Mandalorian does say, everybody go on ahead, I'm going to go ahead and take these shots for you. And what happens at the end? He gets bloody and beaten and destroyed, and he's inside that burning building while all his friends are escaping, and he tells them, go on without me, go on without me, I can't fight anymore, leave me behind. Could you possibly imagine Marcus Fenix saying, fight without me, I can't fight anymore, leave me behind? No, because Marcus Fenix will just charge head on into battle and fight some more. If it wasn't for the fact that a droid stayed behind to administer the first aid spray on the Mandalorian's face and head area, getting him to take his helmet off. Ooh. But it's okay, because it's a droid, not a real person. We got around it, everybody. We found a way. This is the way. My point is, Mandalorian was beaten to a pulp at the end of the season one and was ready to quit. He was ready to stop fighting. He was ready to give up. Marcus Fenix would never give up. So if we talk about, what do they say? It's not the size of the dog in the fight, but the fight in the dog. I got the bigger dog with the bigger fight. And that goes a heck of a long way in a fight. Whoever wants to fight more tends to do better. One will never quit. One will quit. And that's my point number three. I have spoken.
Okay, a few things here. Number one, you mentioned the use of the ship. I'm really like how you said that you allowed me
I did.
To use the ship.
You're welcome.
This is so funny because we don't really put in your vehicles into these battles, right? So this is news to me, Rey's to Canis. I like how this is the opening of season two, right? So he's like really trying to, he's a little upset that he didn't win season one. I did, yeah. So we're not using ships.
Are you trying to rub in season one already, James?
Too late. I already did. Oh, now, here's the thing. We it's not about using ships. I know, the little I do know about the Hammer of Dawn is that it's not instant, right? You need the satellite to be in position.
Correct.
Right? Now, I'm not saying the Mandalorian would know about this, but if he was using his ship would alert him. He'd have an ability to kind of see what's happening in immediate space over him. He'd understand this. He's always like 4 or 5 steps ahead of everyone. Secondly, he doesn't, again, it takes time to do it. What's the area of attack on that? So when that comes down, what kind of area are we talking about? This thing has destroyed city blocks, right? Yeah. Or even bigger areas?
It's real big.
Yeah, it's real big. That means both. That means he'd probably have to be outside of the arena to be safe for himself, right? Because again, he doesn't have a helmet on. He can't be that close to it. And if it's a who would win fight, they're fairly within shooting distance of each other, right? And the Hammer of Dawn is bigger than that in terms of the area that it blasts, if I'm not mistaken. So I'm not really sure that's a thing he'll be using. You're right. The Mandalorian does get grabbed, but he has a super high level of escapability, right? Whenever he gets grabbed, especially by very powerful beings, he knows how to hit them. He knows where to blast them. He knows what to do to get out of that grasp. That is a common thing throughout the Mandalorian series, where he gets grabbed by someone and he's like grappling, blah, 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 nails him, and he's out. Because he's not about like getting into a grappling match with someone. All right, so let me get to my point number three. That was actually a really good point number three on your part, except for the Hammer of Dawn thing. That was kind of a cheap thing. Anyway, there's some key differences here, okay? There's a lot of similarities, but the characters that where I see the difference I see between them, they're actually really big. The first is air superiority. Now, the Mandalorian, he's got his jetpack, and that will be part of his standard equipment. And with it, he was able, you know, in the last episode, you know, spoiler alert.
You have to do it.
Got to do it. He takes out a TIE fighter.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, in air, right? So the TIE fighter comes in to attack, goes by him again. He blasts up, shoots a cable, wraps himself around it, gets dragged around, climbs his way over, gets it, plants a bomb on it, lets go, blows up half the TIE fighter, it hits the ground, he saves the day. Right? So he's able to take out a TIE fighter in midair. So
that's two characters in the Star Wars universe that took a TIE fighter right in.
Bingo. Just and the, and the just first saying. One just that we saw was?
Dwight, can I say?
Sure. Why not?
Rey.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, I think it was in the commercials.
Rey used a lightsaber.
She started, but you don't see the finish of it.
Right. Yeah. Rey used a lightsaber, and the TIE fighter was very close to the ground. This thing was hundreds, if not 1,500 feet up in the air, and that's where he took it out. Pretty impressive. The real difference, though, other than air superiority, remember, he can use that jetpack to go up like 70 meters and stay there for a second, or he can use it to get out of the way really fast. Whatever he needs to, it's great for mobility. But the real difference between the two characters is stealth. Okay? Now, Marcus Fenix may be able to be stealthy as he walks in enemy territory, you know, and tries to stay undetected for a while, but the Mandalorian has absolutely mastered the art of stealth. That's like a Mandalorian tribe kind of training thing. And he uses it to avoid detection by droids, stormtroopers, and other opponents very easily. In fact, he's so good at it that he pretty much weaponizes it just like Batman does. So in the episode, I think it's episode 6, called The Prisoner, the Mandalorian uses stealth. He's on like a prison ship, a New Republic prison ship, and he's using stealth to avoid being caught and what have you. All of a sudden, these like guardian droids who are patrolling the ship see him and his team of other former teammates and bounty hunters, what have you. They engage with the droids. The droids are keeping him at bay with fire, and all of a sudden, somehow behind the droids, the Mandalorian appears. So he was in front of them. And I'm not even really sure how he did it. All of a sudden appears behind them and starts taking them out one by one, getting shot at two, but still kind of using the best armor the best way he can, and he takes them out. After that, when they turn on him, he escapes where he's being held and then uses stealth again to take them out one by one from a distance and some up close, right? So here's how I see the battle going. The Mandalorian and Marcus Fenix see each other and start firing, because that's pretty much what's going to happen. They get up and personal and hit each other with different types of weapons, with no side gaining the advantage, except Marcus Fenix will probably be hitting him harder and what have you, right? So I'm not saying advantage, but the Mandalorian sees the writing on the wall. At that point, the Mandalorian creates a distraction of sorts, which he's done a number of times through the Disney Plus series. He uses stealth by either sneaking away, flying, or somehow maneuvering to a far distance from Marcus Fenix. He uses one of his flash bombs or smoke bombs, whatever he's got on him, which he's done in the series, to create a distraction or to blind him for a second. Again, Marcus Fenix, no helmet, no way protecting himself. That's where he takes position, uses that rifle, loads it with a disintegration blast, and does a headshot, which he's done before. He was blasting away Jawas from a distance and completely destroying them and vaporizing them. So with the Mandalorian standard equipment, including disintegration blast, jetpacks, his combative emphasized upbringing in the Mandalorian culture, and his Beskar armor, as well as the absolute advantage in stealth and air superiority, he took out a TIE fighter, for God's sake. It's not hard to see why the Mandalorian wins this fight. That's my point number three.
I like so much of what you did there. Now, I brought up the jetpack in my previous point because I knew it was coming. It had to, because that is one place where I do believe the Mandalorian does have an advantage over Marcus Fenix. Is that, I mean, but he can jump. It's not like Iron Man where he can fly around and he's all maneuverable. He kind of has to go up, but then he also has to come back down again. And the concern is if he doesn't take care of Marcus Fenix up here, he's going to be back down here again where Marcus Fenix can get to him and see where he's going. You brought up the ship maybe giving him an opportunity to get out of the way of the Hammer of Dawn. If you remember episode one of The Mandalorian, the ship didn't really know that there was an ice monster underneath them that almost pulled the entire ship down and ended the series before it could begin. So the fact that the ship didn't have a defense against an ice monster underneath the ice that almost yanked it down and actually tore a piece off of it, unless I'm mistaken right there. I don't think that the ship's going to have an answer to the Hammer of Dawn if it doesn't against a monster ice creature.
An ice monster doesn't give off like the same type of electrical signal that like a satellite would, though.
Fair enough.
I mean, they can detect ships coming in from orbit.
It's shooting down very, very fast. And also, the Hammer of Dawn is used in the game. So I don't know if you talk about the range being too far. You use it in the game, and you are out of the blast zone when it hits things. It's a very targeted explosion that you're putting together. Otherwise, it would be very impractical for use in the game itself. So I think your point about, you know, having to be too far away to use the Hammer of Dawn, not necessarily accurate. And the last thing I'll bring up is you brought up the prison ship episode, The Prisoner. It's maybe my favorite episode of all of season one, because you got both Clancy Brown and Bill Burr in it. Bill Burr in my Star Wars? Yes, thank you. By the way, Mandalorian got outsmarted by Bill Burr and Clancy Brown in that episode and ended up in the prison cell. It was one of the most obvious double crosses in the history of any media whatsoever, and somehow the Mandalorian did not see it coming. So while the stealth stuff he did at the end is wildly impressive, and I was very happy about that, but if he tries the stealth stuff on Marcus Fenix, what is he doing? He's got to get in close. You get in behind Marcus Fenix, you're putting yourself in grabby range. And if you're in grabby range, you're in chainsaw bayonet range. And I don't like his chances if we get to that range. That's all I'll say about that. I see the match going a little bit differently than you do. I think they get up close. I think they both do damage to each other, and they both wear each other down a little bit. And it's a very back-and-forth battle. And when push comes to shove, I think that Marcus Fenix's will to fight is much stronger than the Mandalorians. The Mandalorians will be looking to make an exit and run away from this battle, escape for another day. He's not the finish-the-job kind of guy, because Baby Yoda's not at stake here. That Marcus Fenix is, and that's what I would say about that. I think it's time to get a decision.
All right, so you've heard points on both sides. When now is the magical time where you have to give us your decision. Take us through your process and tell us who wins this fight.
Oh, the process. The process is having fun. This is a lot of fun to live this world.
It's good. I feel it's very stressful. It's very stressful to be a judge on this show. I really do feel
that. It can be because, you pull in what you know and you're trying not to bias it and pulling from what you guys are saying. Then I'm also not trying not to chime in things I know that I contradict that what you're saying. So.
Oh, nice. That's nice.
So I was like, my argument how it is.
I can't be that much better. So I think it's still a question of brawn versus smarts. Right, someone has the will to fight, but someone that is just elusive enough to get away from a fight and also maybe end it. Both ways, both of them want to end the fight, but they end it differently. Mm-hmm. I think equipment does play a lot into it, but sometimes it's the use of the equipment is actually far more important, right? Like the variety of equipment is never as important as how clever you are. Like, if you, in the world of Star Wars, like, I guess I'll just use Han Solo. Like, Han Solo doesn't really have much, to be honest with you. He has a blaster. And he has a Wookiee that's his best friend. And how he hasn't died all that time, you have no idea. He's just really clever and really elusive. And, he's very dashing, even though he's a scruffy-looking nerf herder. And Marcus, Marcus is just singular focus. Like, it's hard. It's a combination. I remember watching the Watchmen movie. Right. And there's that famous scene that, they get locked up with Rorschach. And he's like, you're not locked up with me. Like, no, I'm not locked up with you. You're locked up with me. Right. Like that's and just that mentality of like, oh, dude, sometimes it's the crazier person in the fight, which neither one of these guys is actually the crazier person in the fight.
I don't think so. Yeah.
Sometimes that person can win. But their definition of winning is not always the same either, because like they could still die and win, too. I'm partially buying time.
The Watchmen.
I love it.
And, cool nerf herder wrestling.
You're just reminding me of the Rorschach leprechaun battle we had last year where Rorschach took that victory.
Was a Rorschach leprechaun battle?
Yes, we did.
Which one? The leprechaun in the hood or leprechaun? Any leprechaun?
It was just
it was all of the above.
Amalgam of the leprechaun.
The Jennifer Aniston first leprechaun.
Oh, absolutely.
She was in there, yeah.
I know. That's when I remember friends came out. I'm like, hey, that's the girl from Leprechaun. No one knew what I was talking about. Not one person. I'm like, no, she was in that Leprechaun movie. I'm telling you.
The right people knew. That's what I would say to that.
It's hard because, in any fight, it's a game of variables, right? And so here's the thing, right? I partially want the Mandalorian to win, and I partially, it's hard. I think Marcus Fenix can win too. I'm siding with, And before I get to that, it's you know what? It's one simple thing that actually, you know, I didn't want to put this out there, but it's one simple thing that you kept on harping on that I think might be the key, is that Marcus Fenix doesn't have anything covering his head. And I think the Mandalorian could still kill him very quickly if he gets... I think it's the Mandalorian in this case, because that.
Oh yes,
that it's unfortunately that simple thing. Because if it's a hand to hand battle, it's going to be like he has. I don't think it's even the headshot. I don't think that's going to work. But I think it's like they get close, and Mandalorian sees that exposure, and he's gonna use that to his advantage.
That's in the series. He does this great thing, which actually didn't work against Clancy Brown's character, where he uses his flamethrowers. You know, because the Clancy Brown character got in so close, pinned him. He's like, "God, use my flamethrower." So he will do that and did it right in his face. So that would be something. Wait. Hold on 1 second. I know this is a podcast, but Ray, are you pouting right now?
I'm not thrilled with this decision. To be quite frank, now, here's the deal. I understand this decision, and I can even to a level respect this decision. But you're wrong. And that's okay. It's okay to be wrong. I think there's a lot of people at home very excited about the Mandalorian winning this battle.
Sure.
Felt this entire time like I'd given the better argument and that you were on my side for the entirety of it. The helmet point, it's a hard to argue point, to be honest with you. I think that both characters have advantages over the other. So it was purely a subjective idea of what the judge felt was the most important of the things going for them. And you know what? Something subjective like that, when it's that close, it's hard to get super mad about it, even though you're totally wrong.
You know what? I try to use what Ray calls intoxicating mind fog to paint a picture, to take someone on a journey on my point number three. And that totally didn't work on you. You referenced something I brought up, I think, in point number one or two.
Yeah.
With him. And it just, you impressed me on a different level. And I'm like, cool, because I didn't think that's what would come to it. I knew it was a factor, but I really like how you analyze it. It's so close. It's a game of inches, and one of them's not wearing any headgear.
And the Hammer of Dawn takes a long time to actually launch, so it's not really... And if the Mandalorian can actually escape... And actually, I remember the first time you used the Hammer of Dawn in the first game, the actual range of it, the width, the actual breadth of it, it's actually not that wide, because you're trying to beat this one really big monster.
Right, and it's in like the middle of a broken building or something.
Yeah, and you're on the other side of the broken building. That's how close you are to it. So it's actually pretty narrow, but you have to be incapacitated for a decent amount of time for the Hammer of Dawn to actually hit you.
Oh, wow. Yeah. By the way, this just makes me want to play the game that much more.
Yeah, I want to go back,
because now I want to do it.
It's really fun. They did it. I mean, I'm surprised they're even still making them, because they're making so much money on Fortnite. They're like, we don't need to make this game anymore.
And I know, Ray, you and I are both big fans of Fortnite, so...
I wouldn't go that.
Fair enough. All right, so...
I'm sorry, Ray and Marcus Fenix. I love you guys, but you guys lose.
Mandalorian wins. Okay, so...
Can you imagine the terrible, naughty words that Marcus Fenix would be saying upon hearing this decision?
That's
true. Would be very surly upon hearing that he just lost to the Mandalorian.
My face would be gone in a chainsaw right now.
There would be a definite chainsaw to the head thing going on for all of us. All right, so when you were fantastic as a judge, I loved all the fellow nerd references you were able to pull up, the Viroblade reference for Evangelion.
Because that's literally the only series I've ever seen that in. So,
right. Yeah. I thought it was brilliant. By the way, I hated the ending of that. I just totally left me not
there's
good.
Like three endings to this entire series.
Well, I thought there was two. There's three.
Well, there's two. Well, third one is the new movies, right? The
first
one is the TV series.
Yeah.
The second one is Anno Hideki then did the movies,
yes.
Right? Death and Rebirth and End of Evangelion. And the third one is we'll see how he ends it.
So. Yeah, hopefully it's good.
It comes
out
in
March. Recommendation.
I could also bring up, I hated the ending to this episode. So, it works out.
So much your comment.
There we go.
Yeah. Okay, great.
All right, so, Wynn, please tell everyone where they can find you.
You can find me on the street sometimes going to a Burger King. If you do, please stop me or come get some fries with me. Otherwise, starrykitchen.com, Instagram, Starry Kitchen, Twitter, Starry Kitchen, Facebook, Starry Kitchen, and sometimes you'll find me on Button Mash. I'm yelling at my staff. I'm doing it out of love. I'm not Gordon Ramsay. I don't call them donkeys. I believe they're people too.
But you believe donkeys are people?
No, that too. The donkeys might be people. Oh no, my favorite. Like when Jordan Ramsay on TV is like, "Hey, you donkey!" Like, you know, maybe that's a British thing. I don't know.
Did you ever take two buns, put them on either side of the person's head, and say you're an idiot sandwich? Do you ever pull that one?
I don't know, but because I would see Leia, so that'd be I would have a smile.
Yeah, totally.
That's a good point.
That.
Yeah, I'd be like.
I want to say you're an idiot sandwich.
I know.
You're so cute.
I know. When I did that to Ray, I'm like, you're adorable. It's just, anyway.
Thank you
for being a judge on the show. You were fantastic. Ray, please tell everyone where they can find you.
You can find me online at Almighty Ray. I think you guys at home saw what happened. This was an exceptionally close battle. And sometimes they don't go the way they should. And you know what? It wouldn't be a show if James didn't win every once in a while. So I guess I have to just accept this and move on. I'm ready for next week already. I'm ready for next week.
All right. Ray, am I hugging you outside of the studio as usual, or are you crying? Like, what's happening?
I mean, I might need some cry bathtub time.
Fair enough. You can find me getting that picture out of my mind and also posing my patented question of the day on Twitter at JamesGabs. You remember to join the official Who Would Win Facebook group to make a suggestion for a matchup for the show and to be part of our growing community. You can also find us on Instagram at WhoWouldWin_show and check out the Who Would Win website at www.whowouldwinshow.com to check out all of our previous episodes. On behalf of myself, Ray Sicanus, and the rest of the amazing Who Would Win team, thank you once again for listening to another episode of Who Would Win. We'll see you next time.